This is Sarah Phillips with Knight Energy Services.
Thank you very much for joining us via our phone line here. I know we've got a Zoom line, we've got phone line, we've got in-person interviews, we've got FaceTime, we've got all kinds of different ways to not only get interviews, but get ignored in my personal life too. I'm finding out lots of ways for people to ignore me. But Sarah Phillips, thank you very much for not ignoring me today as we bring you in to not only talk about some of the things that you're doing with Knight Energy out there in the Marcellus, Utica, and Appalachian Basin, as well as other areas, because I know Knight Energy is all over the United States, but specifically out there in the Northeast. I'm happy to have you come on board as a content correspondent as well from time to time when there are things happening out there. We appreciate you keeping your ear to the ground, if you will, because, boy, I tell you, a lot of people right now really need to know boots-on-the-ground information. They need trusted sources. And for me, there is no better trusted source than the person who's actually there, who's actually somebody there that's going to witness it. And my understanding is there's a new innovation happening out there. We'll get to that in just a second, something that you saw with your own eyes or was at a trade show or something like that. Don't want to give too much of a spoiler alert. But Sarah Phillips, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You know, I'm not too bad. Thanks for joining us. Before we get into some of the micro-hold technology and innovation and some frac plugs and tubing talk, let's talk a little bit about you and your background a little bit. Your number that we exchanged is a West Virginia number. So do you come from West Virginia or explain yourself?
Yes. So I lived in West Virginia from the time I was born to turning 30 years old. I have 2 degrees. I went to college at WVU twice. I got my first degree in business and my second degree in petroleum engineering. And my second degree actually was against the wishes of my parents. They're kind of against the oil. They used to be against the oil and gas industry. They actually called me an earth rapist whenever I picked that degree. I don't know if I should have said that.
No, that's okay. I'm glad you did because I go through the same thing. I live in Fargo, North Dakota, where I actually do not, this is, you know, I shouldn't say this either, but on my personal Facebook, I don't actually connect me with the crude life because I was getting too much scowl and ridicule. Yeah, I do professionally, though. Professionally, I do. But just my personal Facebook, because I started it before I got in the oil and gas industry. And this is the first time I'm actually disclosing that story. And it's not because it's not because I'm ashamed of the industry. It's just because there's no value there. Do you know what I mean? Like there's no support for the industry within my personal Facebook. It is on my professional and everything else. So how did you go about that with your parents? I did. That's how I handled mine. How did you go about that? Because I think there's more people experiencing this now than before, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't really have a choice. So in between my first and my second degree, I worked in the field and I absolutely fell in love with it. You need oil and gas in order to sustain your life and luxuries, right? So it's a very nurturing, romantic industry that people don't usually think about. They usually think about it as machismo, right? So I didn't really have a choice with going into this industry. I worked in the industry in between my first and second degree. I went back to school in order to further my career in this industry and my involvement. And my parents just basically followed suit. So they saw the importance of what I was working on. And now they're extremely proud. But then they wanted me to be a school teacher, which I'm not designed for.
And I should mention, I did post my cover story in the Oil Man magazine on my personal Facebook. So that was kind of my coming out party as well. And yeah, it was. Cause I, you know, as you were talking, I was relating it to my life a little bit about how I've slowly been getting more people accepted to oil and gas. And when I started into this, I was like your parents. I was programmed that, you know, the oil and gas industry was doing, you know, evils and all these different things. And what I love about what we've been able to create at the Crude Life is, you know, with and I'm saying this because I truly believe this with myself. I truly believe Matt Hill and Ken Lavin have got hearts that are drawn to the oil and gas industry because they see a lot of what you just said, and I see it too, which is the opportunity that it gives individuals and people who have very good self-esteems and people who really want to go out there and try innovation and actually go out and be competitive into the workplace, they get very attracted to oil and gas. That's what I've found. And it's the opportunity. And then also, there's a little bit of like, for me, I felt like I was lied to by my school and by my education. And I almost felt like I needed to go help the industry stick up for the justice and the injustice, if that makes sense.
It's very politicized, and most people don't look at the science behind it. So I was trained scientifically, and I don't really even pay attention to the politics.
It's funny you mentioned that, too, because I just did an interview not that long ago, and we kind of sidebarred a little bit because the person knew me, and they knew me as a man of science. And I said, you know, it's funny you say that, because what really drew me to where I went in oil and gas was the science. And, you know, we don't get big dollars from oil companies. What ended us to where we are is we followed the science, not the money. And so like people always accuse me, oh, you're just bought off. No, actually we're not. And neither is our other correspondent and our other guy. These are people who actually do believe in what we're talking about. And by the way, we have the science to back it up too. And that's generally when they leave the room. But,
it's hard to argue science.
It is refreshing to hear you talk about, you know, just the sheer science, the passion, your journey, your story. So you're in West Virginia. You go to college twice. Where was your first job?
In the oil and gas industry?
Yeah, in the oil and gas industry, yeah.
It was for a company. It's called Shaft Drillers International. So at first I did accounts payable, and then I eventually got permitted to be a safety coordinator. And that is when I was able to go out to the field for the first time ever. And it was like falling in love for the first time. And I know that that sounds extremely cheesy, but it was like such an intense sense of belonging being out there with the candid, rough, really hardworking roughnecks to the technology. I couldn't get enough of it. I loved it.
I'll never forget Sean Forbes. She special guest co-host from time to time here on The Crude Life. And she's really extremely knowledgeable about the supply chain. And she knows a lot about products. She does the OG directory. And we were driving to the Horseshoe Arena through Midland, Texas, and it's just a desert with oil rigs. And she she looks at me and she goes, God, I love this stuff.
I've heard about her. I was told to reach out to her. I'll do that after this podcast.
Yeah, she's got that heart too, that's very passionate for the oil and gas industry, no question about it. So
her and Jennifer McIntyre, I don't know if you've heard about her, but she's kind of my hero up here.
I'm not familiar with her, so I do apologize for that.
No, that's okay. You'll know her.
Okay, all right. Well, I look forward to the future meeting then. So, Sarah Phillips, Knight Energy Services, as well as a content news correspondent here for The Crude Life out of the Marcellus Utica Appalachian area. Now, I was looking at the Appalachian. Boy, that spans pretty far. I mean, you're talking about down to Arkansas, up to New York, really. That's pretty good. Yeah. And then, of course, Marcellus Utica, people know that mostly for the natural gas that comes out of there. Cabot Oil and Gas, who just merged with Corterra. Thank you. That's just, you know, that county right there, Susquehanna County or whatever the name is, big gas county there. So give your company a plug a little bit before we talk about the micro hold innovation that is being just talked about out there on the East Coast and the Marcellus Utica Appalachian Basin out there. But talk about your frac plugs, tubing, some of the stuff that you guys have going on there at Knight Energy Services.
So basically what I sell, or really the better word would be rent out, it's robust tubing. It's P110 PH6. So we use this tubing in order to drill out frac plugs. So I don't know how to explain that like in a layman's way, but so we rent out that tubing and then we also rent out the handling tools with it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's okay. Robust tubing, frac plugs. I'm just writing my notes down here. So who is your customer, by the way? Because a lot of times when you're talking about the oil and gas industry, I joke around that, you know, you got the upstream, the downstream, the midstream, the salmon stream, the trout stream, because you've got truckers and cafe drivers and florists that rely on the oil and gas industry too. So it's a very big industry. But specifically, who is your customer?
So our customers are operators. We have almost all of the major operators up in this area. Do you want to know?
No, you don't have to drop names or anything like that. Yeah, no, that's not what I was looking for. More just like operators, like you said.
We're pretty widespread. Because
some people, you know, they'll say like, you know, we're just actually the frac sand guys, you know, that sort of thing. Okay, well, good for you. You found a hyper niche that works because in this industry, you can do that. That's the beauty is that you can... I like those guys that go around and do mobile oil changes and things like that. Those are the entrepreneurs I love. They're just figuring out every which way to sell a pick and a shovel during the gold boom. And right now, actually, we've got a technology boom known as an oil boom going on because one of the first stories that we wrote, the second story, was that this is not an oil boom but a technology boom. And one of the technologies that we're going to talk about right now with Sarah Phillips with Knight Energy Services is about microhold. It's technology that's happening. And you've got a company out there that you saw a presentation or engaged with out there. Let's talk a little bit about this and what's happening out there, Sarah Phillips. Go ahead and explain. Is it 10X? Did I get my notes right?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. It's called 10X. So my first job was what I told you as a safety coordinator, but my second job in the oil field, it was an internship fracking, and I absolutely fell in love with that. So I know a little bit about it. I just fracked for a summer, but so I'm going to try to explain it, fracking this specific part as well as I can. So basically what you do is you drill a hole down in the ground and then you have casing and the casing is set into the ground with cement. And then, so in the shale specifically, if you view the shale as like a sponge, there's a lot of pores in the sponge, right? And the pores have like natural gas or oil, which you're trying to extract, but you need to be able to communicate within those pores. So you have to break up that sponge or the rock in order to create channels for whatever you're extracting to communicate through. Does that make sense?
I think so. Okay.
But you basically just break up the rock so that you can get the liquid within the rock to communicate. You get a stream instead of these little pockets.
Right, right. Okay, so walk me through what happens next.
Okay, so after you drill this hole, you send something called a gun down into the casing, at the bottom of the casing, and you shoot off this detonator, which shoots off all these like little explosions, which create these little holes in your casing. And those holes penetrate from the casing, which is basically this, it's what creates the walls of your hole, I guess. I'm trying to explain this in very layman's terms.
You're doing fine. You're doing a good job.
Okay, cool. So it shoots off and it creates these holes which penetrate through the casing and the cement and eventually get to your rock, right?
Right.
So that creates communication. So whenever you do pump down water and sand, you can break up this rock. So you break up the rock by pushing out high pressure water into it. And then that's what allows the rock to communicate, the fluid or the natural gas to communicate or to travel through or create these channels. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I just have to, is this for conventional and unconventional fields?
This is unconventional.
Unconventional?
The horizontal part, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. I just, you know, sometimes I got to ask some basic questions here because it gets out of hand here. Did you mention the different types of meshes, by the way? Did we get into that, the difference? You know, because we probably should. Like, there's 100 mesh, 200 mesh, and then the micro hold is actually even is quite small.
Yeah. So I think the micro mesh is 600 times smaller than the 100 mesh.
Okay.
I'd have to look it up. We I could interview the guy, but it's significantly smaller and it's not sin as sand. So whenever you do create these cracks, they act as wedges, right? And the mm-hmm. tip of your wedge, you need to be able to prop open the fractures, because if you create these fractures and then withdraw without propping it open, the fractures will just collapse.
What's
and
it
then
do?
You will have the channel.
Do they have any results on like treatment pressure or anything like that, that they've seen any lowering or drops?
Yes. So that's the thing. So what they normally do after they shoot these holes in this metal, they're jagged. And whenever you pump down this this mesh or this sand, they get caught in these like little holes, especially with the high pressure, and it creates friction, and it's a big no-no. So you don't want to screen out, which basically means plug your holes, and then you won't be able to have communication to the rock.
If I'm right. Following the tea leaves, if you got a drop in pressure treatment, my guess is you probably got a little less pump time too.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can get to your design rate faster. So basically what this like really small, proppant does, it cleans up the hole mechanically. So normally they pump down hydrochloric acid first, and then that cleans up the hole chemically. And what they found is that their micro hold cleans it up mechanically. But what they were really trying to do was get micro fractures, because that sand is so small, they could prop it open like much smaller fractures, thus increasing the communication.
I might have a really dumb question, but it's at least going to be a way to introduce the word proppant, which a lot of people may not know that word if they're listening to this on the radio. But I was actually introduced to it mostly from these trade shows in the early days when I went and just dove into a lot of these things, because, you know, I always thought frac sand proppants, right? Well, then I go to a trade show and I see these little ceramic balls, and they were basically saying it's a replacement for frac sand, and I'm like, okay, but then they kept calling it proppant. And so my guess is when you say that word, that you're it's kind of like sardines, it's an all the above type thing. There's nothing specific that we need to worry about any there, or
as long as it props open the fracks, you know, just thinking of propping something open. Yeah. Propping a door, as long as it props open these fractures or these channels, it's called proppant. So The ceramics, like, they're round and they have good structural integrity, but sometimes they're not as cost effective.
It's hard to walk the tightrope sometimes, because, you know, we start talking, then I'm like, okay, well, I should ask conventional, unconventional, and you get these certain questions you just kind of gotta go through every now and then. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what did you take away from this? You know, I mean, was it the savings? Was it the time? Was it just the innovation? What was your thoughts?
I've always really been interested in propping. I had to shovel it. I had to shovel the sand whenever I was interning, and I hated that. And also, you can get, I think it's called silicosis, so silica in your lungs, right? And then, I mean, you have to wear these dumb masks, and I hate them. But the sand creates silicosis. So there's three things, really, that I think are beneficial with this microhold. A, it cleans out those perfs, which reduces your treatment pressure. It reduces your treatment pressure, which allows you to do more stages a day, which decreases your total project time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest thing. It's a huge cost savings. B, it increases your production, because it increases the channels that you're able to frack out, because it's so very tiny, like, you can access more. And then three, it's a safety concern. So it reduces your chance of getting, or eliminates your chance of getting silicosis, because it's delivered as a slurry. So there's never dust up in the air that you can inhale. But I just want to mention two more things. It also helps prevent screen outs, which is the number one no-no in fracking. So whenever I fracked, like, if a company man would screen out, oftentimes they would get fired, and it reduces your treatment pressure. It's really genius, and I hope I explained it well. But yeah, it's especially beneficial with tight shale, which is what we have up here in the Appalachian.
So wait, you used to shovel sand? I used to wash semis, which was one of my favorite jobs. But didn't you used to work for Schlumberger? Who did you? Who were you shoveling for? And I guess connect those dots a little bit with Schlumberger and shoveling and things.
Well, this traveling the sand was my internship at Stingray Pressure Pumping, but Schlumberger, yeah, Schlumberger was my first like real adult job in the oil and gas industry.
And what'd you do there, by the way?
So I worked on electric submersible pumps. So it was like such an insane lifestyle. Like, it's hard to explain to people, especially as a female. It was a very rough, rigorous lifestyle. So basically what I did, I would work 21 days on and 7 days off. And I would travel from man camp to man camp, which is basically this like little tiny college dorm for like rough oil field guys and like tiny, tiny beds. So I would travel from man camp to man camp in between these jobs. And I would wake up at like 5 a.m. and I would have to go out to these locations and I'd have to use this equipment. So I was installing electric submersible pumps, which required mechanically putting together like 10 pieces of equipment. And it was in North Dakota. So a lot of times it was negative 30 degrees. And my equipment was designed for a man. It was super heavy and it was like 8 hours of strenuous work.
Yeah, these North Dakota winters can be a bit much. I looked at my weather app this morning. It was minus 19 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that job required like an insane amount of mental, emotional, and physical labor. Like, it was insane. It makes me feel like a badass. Like, now whenever I go into the sales world, like, I'm usually cleaned and polished. But I've had a more difficult lifestyle than most of the people that I encounter. It was insane.
How did your summer out doing the fracking, how was that received by some of the guys out in the field?
I'd say 95% of the guys out in the field whenever I was fracking were, I'd say 99% of them were excited.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people consider women out in the field to be a distraction, and I'm sure that there's some truth to that. But on the flip side, sometimes guys will work extremely hard when there's a girl out there to try to impress them. But at Schlumberger, it was hard because I was supervising these guys, and they were terrified of me because everyone preaches sexual harassment. So as soon as a girl gets out there, they don't want to talk at all, which is a huge safety concern. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If I'm supposed to supervise you and be somewhat in charge of your life, you have to listen to me. And if you're afraid to talk to me, it's difficult. So I would usually show up there, crack some jokes, let them know I'm cool and okay. I haven't turned anybody in 3 years. And then they would loosen up.
Yeah, I tell you, sometimes the communication culture, no matter what workplace you're in, definitely could use, could use some massaging from time to time, because we're so quick to polarize so many different things, you know, whether it's a simple conversation. Well, I find it funny because like holiday parties, if you tell people things are going fine, they get mad at you. They're like, what do you mean things are fine? Let me tell you the way they're not. And it used to be where, you know, they would get bored and walk away, and now they get mad. Well, I appreciate the time today. Anything you want to make sure that some people know about you or Knight or 10X? Is it 10X or 10X?
10X.
Okay, T-E-N-E-X.
Yes.
Okay. And we'll have some links to their study as well. We'll have links to Knight Energy Services and Sarah Phillips out at the Marcellus Utica Appalachian region, but Knight Energy Services is all over the United States, probably worldwide. You guys selling worldwide yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, well, we'll have to get you in touch with Sterling and his Aramco Bratz buddies. They're over there doing their thing over in Saudi Arabia. So,
Schlumberger sent me to Abu Dhabi 4 times.
Yeah, they do stuff worldwide. Yeah, heck yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll make sure we have the links available to the site. Any final thoughts? Anything we left out? Any, you know, good chili recipes or any good, you know, thing you want to add?
I do want to add, so Toby Rice sent a letter to Elizabeth Warren. It's really highlights and makes it in an intuitive way the importance of natural gas and that it is the greatest green initiative on the planet right now. And the Appalachian Basin is the epicenter for natural gas. It has the Utica and the Marcellus Shale, which are the largest natural gas producing fields in the U.S. I would highly, highly, highly encourage everybody to read that letter. I mean, if you're pro or anti oil field, you can just Google it. Google Toby Rice's response to Elizabeth Warren.
I'll look for it, but if you send it to me, we'll get it linked up even faster. So that way people can just go to the show page, click on the link, as well as the 10X study PDF, as well as the Sarah Phillips Knight Energy Services. Will link people up to your LinkedIn account as well as Knight Energy Services website. All right, we'll see if we can't get all kinds of activity going. The ecosystem of activity right here in this podcast interview, folks. Thank you, Sarah Phillips. Any final words, thoughts?
Nope, that's it. Oil and gas is saving the world. Everyone remember it.